You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and this week I welcome one of the best wrestlers on the independent scene, Bobby the Body Shields. I look forward to talking about his career, working for all the major companies, training under Taz, life on the road, and much more. Bobby Shields, welcome to OWW Radio.
Hi there. Thank you for having me on.
You got it. How you been? How's your holiday season going so far?
Pretty uneventful, I'd say, which is probably for the better.
You know, I've worked a couple shows with you, Bobby, and what do you do outside of wrestling? What is your full-time job?
Well, my full-time job, I actually work in the tech department of a school. But outside of that, I actually compete in powerlifting. So it's not just a gimmick. I really am coming straight from the gym, pretty much. It's my thing. It's my life. It's what I enjoy.
Yeah, so right. So people that don't know, your ring entrance, you say that's you're coming straight from the gym. For people that want to get into professional wrestling, you better be really comfortable in the gym, right? Because that is a big part of this. You have to look the part.
Yeah, definitely. When I was training, and maybe even just first starting, I realized very quickly on being 120, 30, 40 pounds, whatever it was, like, this isn't going to cut it. I'm not going to be, I know there's only like one Eddie Guerrero out there. There's only one, you know, Dean Malenko, whatever, you know, I'm not going to be the next one of those. And you need to have some sort of, you know, physique to go with you. And even they had it. It's not saying they didn't, but I wasn't going to be the best mat technician there ever is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I worked with you here on the East Coast. Did you grow up here?
I did. I actually grew up in the town where Kurt Angle went to college, Clarion, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. And when you were growing up, were you always a big wrestling fan?
From about second grade on. Funny enough, I remember my dad watching wrestling when I was younger and me hating it because it just wasn't interesting to me. And if I look back at things of that time, I could kind of see why it probably wasn't. It didn't have the glitz and the glam of wrestling today.
Mm-hmm.
So it never hooked me. And then I feel like one of my earliest memories was seeing The Undertaker. I feel like it was right around the time that he might have just started showing up. And, yeah, from there I was pretty much hooked. I remember maybe I, like, stumbled across it once on my own. Maybe it was like Tuesday Night Titans at that time. I can't even remember. I was searching for it like maybe every day or every couple of days or once a week for a little bit, and finally breaking down and asking my dad, when is wrestling on? And he told me, and I don't know if I've really ever totally missed an episode of Raw or whatever since then.
Yeah, I always think it's interesting to hear how we all got involved in some shape or form with the business. And what's interesting about your story, it didn't hook you right away with just the sheer athleticism of it. It was more than when it became a little bit more entertainment. It seemed like you said, with The Undertaker, that's what really hooked.
Yeah, definitely. But funny enough, at least, I was a fan of Hulk Hogan before I was a fan of wrestling. And mainly, I think it was Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling, the cartoon show.
Sure.
I was just the age then that's what that was targeted for.
I was very fortunate because I grew up in York, Pennsylvania, and we went to the Hershey Park Arena a lot.
Yeah.
To see World Wrestling Federation action. And the first live show that I ever went to was a taping of Saturday night's main event, and Hulk Hogan, of course, was on the card. And so the arena mm-hmm. was sold out. You know, we had 15, 16,000 people there. The excitement was unbelievable. I remember being just so attracted to that energy.
Yeah. And the first show that I went to wasn't even until 95, 96, something like mm-hmm. that. And I found the results online. It's amazing that I actually still liked wrestling after going to this. Because looking back at that show, oof.
You've been involved in pro wrestling 12 years now, I believe. What made you decide to actually pursue this? Because it's not something that you can take lightly.
Well, I did judo off and on 10 years or so growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I started noticing that a lot of judo, a handful of things, first off, that were moves in wrestling were kind of like judo throws in a sense, like the rock bottom. And there's a little bit of a jump to it, but that's kind of a judo takedown right there. And the very first thing that they teach you to do in judo is how to fall properly. So I had been bumping since I was like 6 or 8. So there was that, and just as I started to like it more and more and learn more about it, and my friends and I, we used to kind of backyard wrestle, but since it was cold in Clarion, we did it inside in like the living room. We videotape, and it's god-awful, and I hope all those tapes disintegrate, and nobody ever sees the light of them. Yeah, so it was just these things, just this constant progression and evolution and growth of myself and my liking of it. And there happened to be, I went to school in Rochester, New York, and there happened to be a training school there, mm-hmm. and which I think has the greatest name ever for a training school, possibly. It was called Suplex U. And so I went there and then had my first match July 2002 after like a year plus of training. So really I've been around wrestling since early 2001, but I kind of just say I've been wrestling for 12 years because.
When did you start getting into the powerlifting?
Powerlifting, so I've actually kind of always trained this way in a sense. I love moving heavy weight. I've never been a big fan of, like, today's going to be my bicep day. So I've always loved doing heavy weights and lifting a lot and the bigger movement. So I've always trained that way. And then I was in a gym that I had joined, and a guy named Alex Kang, who competes at the national level in the USAPL and has competed internationally with the IPF, he saw me and actually kind of asked me, you know, about if I've ever thought about competing and if I'd like to compete. He kind of, in a sense, he recruited me because he saw that I'm already training that hard, if not harder, and I knew what I was doing. So in April, I did my first competition, and I've done 4 in total this year.
Oh, well, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely a rush, and it's definitely a very supportive community.
What's interesting about that is, you know, you come out and I've seen you work face, I've seen you work heel, you're great with the wrestling crowd, you're excellent in the ring, but that's a totally different kind of performance art than getting into the powerlifting competition. So is there one that you like more than the other, or is it just kind of, you love it all?
I definitely love the wrestling more, and Alex actually asked me a lot, or tells me a lot, that he doesn't believe that I can kind of do both at the same time, because both are very brutal on your body, definitely.
Right.
He wants to see me, him being the powerlifter that he is, he wants to see me succeed more in powerlifting, rightfully so, and he'd love for me to stop wrestling and showing up to the gym with limping or with my ribs hurting or this or that and not being able to give 100% in the gym, but give me 100% of what I can that day. But till something totally stops me, I don't see any end in sight for the wrestling. And there's actually been people who have done both. Biggie Langston, actually, I believe while he was under contract for WWE, competed in powerlifting and won and set records for the USAPL, won their national event.
Wow. I didn't know that, though. Not hard to believe when you look at him.
Yeah.
But I want to go back, Bobby, to when you were in Rochester and you started going to Suplex U. And I guess you were balancing school at the time with getting into wrestling and going to the gym. I mean, you must have been extremely busy. Was there a part of the training that was maybe harder than you expected? And maybe at some point you said, the hell with this, you know, I'm not going to make it?
Not really. I mean, it was hard, but that was never really an option. My goal was I wanted to do this. And I mean, a lot of things didn't really come that naturally to me. It was hard for me to learn how to do, like, a headlock takeover or an arm drag even. Just these things that we think that people look at are simple, but they're not very simple. The timing has to be just right. And I mean, yeah. It still took me like a couple years into wrestling, like, to be able to do them with good execution.
For this interview, you told me that you trained under Taz at the Team Taz Dojo. That's different than Suplex U, right?
Yes. So the Team Taz Dojo, in 2011, he had a finishing school, is what he called it. And it is, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, it is the second best thing that I've ever spent money on in wrestling, the first being a pair of boots. I really wish he still had his dojo open and more people could benefit from it, but it took me from one point to a completely new level, and just within a week of working with him. He is such an amazing teacher, and the advice he gives and just the stuff. A lot of the things that he said were things that I'll go to a Ring of Honor seminar, or I'll go to a seminar here or there, and it's stuff that people are telling people now. And this was back in 2011 when he was saying, like, clean up your social media. They really check that, you know. All these things that everybody is preaching now. He was ahead of the curve telling everybody to do these things. He's such an amazing coach, teacher, mentor, whatever it be.
Every wrestler I've ever talked to, Bobby, has said that professional wrestling is a constant learning experience. And whether it's with mentors like when you went to Team Taz Dojo or at Suplex U or your fellow workers in the locker room. As you moved along, though, you know it's just as important to develop your character. How hard was it for you to develop those sides of your persona, the promos, the working the crowd, you know, being a character?
I mean, that's still coming. I really didn't iron out who Bobby the Body was, I don't know, until the last 2 years or so. 10 years into wrestling, basically. I had an idea, but then sitting down with my pal Zima Ion, he helped me iron out who it is, like to help to define. I realized then, if you ask so many independent wrestlers, you know, tell me, who are you? They can't really give you an answer. And that's a problem with independent wrestling today. If you can't define who you are, it becomes a lot harder to cut that promo, to have material to work with. You just become another bland guy. And not everybody needs to have some sort of cartoony, over-the-top character, but it should be more than your average traits. So that has been the hardest thing, is just ironing out and figuring out who I am. And once you know that, you know how you'd react in situations.
We mentioned earlier about being a Hogan fan at one point and how The Undertaker kind of caught your eye. Who became kind of your influences, though, when you started getting into this business? Maybe that you would pay particular attention to if they were on Monday Nitro or Monday Raw, because you kind of wanted to be like them in the ring.
Yeah, well, one guy who I feel like really inspired me and I like to watch a lot was X-Pac, Sean Waltman. And funny enough, I don't believe he actually is a small guy in a sense, but he was a small guy compared to who he was wrestling at though in those days, in the mid-90s. So he was somebody, everybody says Shawn Michaels, but it's true. He's somebody, Chris Jericho is another one. A whole lot of different people who I felt like, I don't want to say similar builds, but similar in a sense, my frame, I guess.
Oh, you're fortunate, I think. You know, think about 30 years ago, it would be very hard to study and learn about other wrestlers. Now you have the WWE Network. You have great DVD box sets or YouTube or, you know, all these great social media outlets where you can watch and learn wrestling styles from all over the world and basically any show that's out there. That must be a wonderful learning opportunity.
Completely. I mean, it totally changes the landscape of things. I feel like there's no excuse now. I recently had a ladder match coming up, and what did I do? I went on the WWE Network and just pulled up different ladder matches and watched all of them and got ideas that way. It's right there. There's absolutely no excuse. You have it on your phone. Everybody has an Android or an iPhone, and WWE Network is right there on those. so there's no excuse anymore to not watching, you know, people of the past. And even before that, when I was getting more heavily into wrestling, it was tape trading. I used to regularly buy, and I have boxes of them, VHS tapes from RF Video.
That's pretty cool. I mentioned earlier in the interview here that I've worked shows where you worked as a heel. I worked shows where you worked as a face. Do you prefer one or the other?
I prefer actually being a heel. To me, it's a lot. You control a lot more of the match, the pacing, the flow, a lot of things like that. It's also a lot easier. I'm actually very worried almost every time I'm a babyface, in a sense, because it's a lot easier to be hated than to be liked. And so there's that worry, like, a little bit. Will this heel go out and do his job, basically? On the independents, as you've probably seen, in a sense, there is quite a few heels that want to be liked by the fans. So if they're going to go out there, then they might end up getting cheered. If they're somebody who went and sold pictures and signed autographs for all the kids during intermission, who's gonna hate that?
Yeah, you touched on a good point there, because you think back to when, like, Rowdy Roddy Piper was working all over as one of the top heels, and he wasn't signing autographs at intermission, and he didn't go to the ring caring if he was liked. I mean, you turn on the other side of the coin, someone like Ricky Steamboat, who's one of the greatest baby faces of all time, that's a real talent as well, isn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. There are definitely people that, like, just have that natural ability to be loved. And I mean, it doesn't matter who they're against. They're going to get cheered, which is great. I'm not sure I'm one of them, so it's a little bit of an uphill battle some days.
I miss a little bit, though, some of when the business was under the covers. Now everything's so in the open. I mean, honestly, when I was a kid, if you would have told me that the Hart Foundation was kind of related and, you know, and friends with the British Bulldogs, when I was 12 years old, I could not have handled that.
I mean,
you know, or that Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth were actually married in real life. Now, I eventually, of course, learned that, but when I was 12, 13 years old, my head would have exploded if I would have known that. So I kind of liked them a little bit more when they were superheroes in that regard.
Yeah, but I mean, the world has changed. I mean, even the CIA can't keep information, you know, under wraps. So it's bound to come out. Maybe the reasons it did, you know, maybe aren't the best. You know, I believe a lot of it was Vince McMahon didn't really want to pay these athletic commissions, which I don't blame him. He's a businessman. He's the world's one of the world's greatest businessmen. He's taken a circus act and turned it into what it is today, like an amazing thing. So it is what it is. There's no going backwards. It would still be better. But you know what? There are so many people. There are so many people that still don't know that it is predetermined.
Yeah. Or at least they want to believe. Which is...
No, I don't even mean the toothless fans from, like, the deep down south, whatever, who believe it's real. There are straight up very intelligent people who I meet, you know, every so often, every day, maybe even go on to say, who will go, when I tell them I'm a professional wrestler on the weekend, they'll ask, you know, if it's predetermined, if you know what's going to happen, you know, and I don't tell them anything. A magician shouldn't reveal their secrets, but
good point.
These are well-educated people asking these questions. So that secret isn't totally out.
Back in July of 2002, you said you had your first match. I mean, you're a pretty confident guy, Bobby, but stepping through that curtain for the first time, what were your feelings?
I was ready to throw up, I remember. And I was literally shaking. And it was ridiculous. Leading to my first match, actually, is quite the story. Suplex U went out of business. The company that it was the school for, New Millennium Wrestling, died. And shortly after, the school died, too. And that summer, I actually went around to a handful of different independent shows, and I'd show up and I'd look for try to figure out whoever the promoter is. And after the show, I'd ask them for a tryout, actually, or if I could do anything to get a little tryout, and I'd explain my situation. And actually, the first place, one of the earliest places that I went, it was like their third or fourth show, maybe, was Shakara. And Mike Quackenbush was a very nice guy. I have nothing bad to say about him. He said he was just using his students at the time, which he was. And, you know, he wished me luck. But from there, I met a couple. He did point me in the direction of a couple people. The one guy, Brock Singleton, was on the show. And he said, Brock made a mention that, you know, I'll be wrestling in Big Run, Pennsylvania in like 2 weeks, and I'll introduce you to this guy, Casanova Kato. And so 2 weeks later, I went there, and Brock introduced me to Kato. And I'm sure Brock was a little bit surprised actually to see me follow through. You know, Kato said, well, I got a show in like a week, so, you know, come out a little bit early and I'll give you a tryout. And I'm sure Kato was surprised to see me there before the ring got there. Before the ring truck was even there. So I made sure to, you know, set up and good first impression. He had me bump around and run the ropes. And it just so happened somebody had canceled that day. It was like a six-way hardcore match. And by hardcore, it was like the softcore, like with cookie sheets and just silliness like that. That was big in the early 2000s. And so, so that was my first match was this. As a replacement fill-in. Something that I'm really, like, glad in a sense I earned it, really.
How do you think you've improved since 2002 until today as a wrestler in terms of, you know, your moveset and just how comfortable you are in the ring?
I don't even think there's a way to explain how I've improved it. I've gone from being somebody who looks like a strong wind might blow them over to somebody who actually looks like they could be a professional wrestler. And, you know, I feel like I'm decently respected by my peers in wrestling and I'm not a complete embarrassment versus what I was probably in 2002. I mean, if I go back and watch stuff from then, it is god awful. I don't know how anybody put me on shows.
Well, you've been on a lot of shows. We've worked a lot of promotions. Primal Conflict Wrestling, ECWA, IWC, a lot of the territories, but you've also worked for all three major organizations, WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor. Tell us how you got your break to go to WWE.
So WWE, it just so happened, the first time I worked for WWE was in 2009. Yes, 2009. And I'd totally given up on trying to get booked as being an extra. And then all of a sudden, of course, because I'd given up, maybe be it 2-3 months out, I got a call from WWE and they were coming to SmackDown in Norfolk and Hampton, I'm sorry, and Baltimore. It just so happened to be they were leaving for the tribute to the troops to Iraq the next day. So they were taping SmackDown on a Sunday. SmackDown and ECW on a Sunday and then Raw on Monday. And so, you know, much like how it is for WWE, you don't know if you're going to be doing what you're going to be doing. Maybe you're going to be a security guard. Maybe you're going to get to work a match. Maybe you're just going to eat catering. And so they had us work out in the ring. I had been told before that one of the things that they immediately look for is how you lock up. They're so good that they, and I can see it now a little bit with people too. The way you lock up, you can tell almost immediately how if the person has a clue what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that before.
So, I locked up nice and strong or whatever. I don't know if that was completely what sold them on it. Maybe I was just the perfect fit too that day. Whatever it was, I got a spot, and it was myself and Tyler Hilton versus the debuting Trent Barretta and Kalen Cross. In their debut match for ECW, people can look it up on YouTube. It's all about 3 minutes long, but that was my first time. And then the next time I was booked 3 years later, same actual, it was the Verizon Center in DC and same building. So same building as the time before. This time it's week number two of Ryback's debut, and I fit the bill again for the perfect size, maybe it'd be it, or maybe they like the way I bump, whatever it be, but they picked me for the spot against Ryback, and this one didn't last nearly as long as the tag match. And there I am, I guess, immortal as ever, or forever, as Benny Tamer. Yeah, so that was my WWE experiences. I've been used a few other times, like security guard or whatever be it, but yeah.
But you've also spent some time in Ring of Honor and TNA, and as mentioned, a lot of other promotions around the country. Bobby, when you go into a locker room for the first time, now that you're a veteran, you feel pretty comfortable right away? Because I think for the people in the crowd, they may not understand some of the dynamics of a locker room.
Somewhat. You can get a feeling of the locker room pretty quick looking around, usually. If I don't know anybody, I'm kind of a reserved guy, so I'm going to stay to myself. If it's someplace that I call home, like a Primal Conflict or an ECWA, I'm a lot more comfortable. Yeah, I also feel like you can kind of judge people's ability by how they act also in the locker room. So you kind of get a feel of what the overall show is going to be like.
Well, I did want to ask you, I'm glad you brought that up, you know, working different crowds in different cities, certain pockets of this country treat wrestling a lot differently, don't they?
They definitely do. And it's really hard to judge sometimes. I think in the end, they all react to good wrestling. And people want to say, like, you know, this one needs this or that or these head drops. And that's true, I guess, to a degree. You know, a Philadelphia crowd, I don't think, is going to react the same as a crowd in, trying to think of a random place, in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, for example. They're gonna need two different things.
Yep.
And I think today we all, once again, WWE Network or whatever be it, we all understand how these different cities work or these different areas. You know, a lot of people have been around enough or watched it enough that they have a good clue on what to expect.
Last week on Monday Night Raw, John Cena wrestled the Big Show in the main event, and I didn't, you know, I've kind of lost track now how many times those two guys have actually wrestled. It must be a pretty easy night for the two of them. They're so familiar with each other. What about when Bobby has to lock up with someone for the first time? How long does it take to get some chemistry in the ring with somebody?
You know, sometimes it's just right. It's just there immediately. There are certain people who I after one time, I just want to wrestle them, you know, for the rest of my life, every day of the week. And I think a lot of that comes with experience, too. If two experienced guys get in there, I feel like it's a lot easier, obviously, to gel and work off each other a little bit. And, you know, both know how to sell or whatever, be it. Both know how to work, basically. It's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, it really just depends, because some people you just click with pretty quickly, or you may never really click with.
I guess that's part of being a professional. I mean, you got to, you know, put your personalities aside, any kind of, you know, creative differences, and get in the ring and give the fans a good show.
Yeah. You just go out there and do what you can do sometimes, and maybe it's not the four-star match, but not everything's going to be that four-star match every time.
Mm-hmm. You told me that you wrestled internationally, and I know this is a big deal for a lot of wrestlers to be able to do that. Was it a good experience for you?
Going to England for a month and wrestling for Brian Dixon was hands down one of the best experiences I've ever done in wrestling. I know I kind of said that with the Team Taz thing, but it made me love wrestling so much. You were wrestling 3-4 nights a week and in front of 200, 300, 400, even 1,000 people. And these people are there to be entertained and just want to be entertained and want to enjoy themselves. And they're kind of not the jaded crowd that we see in America so much, who are kind of bloodthirsty in a sense. These crowds reacted to the small things. And it was just so enjoyable to wrestle in front of these fans. It really, they really needed more personality, and they wanted, it really required more the sports entertainment, I guess. It was very, very WWE-like in a sense, because they aren't wrestling fans. They don't want to see chain wrestling for a half an hour. That would probably kill it.
So, sad to say that you lost your ECWA title recently. Bobby, do titles mean more to the fans, though? I mean, we know that championship belts are just props. for good storytelling, but the fans really care about it, don't they?
I saw a quote recently about title belts, and it made so much sense. We all want to kind of feel like the title belts mean nothing because we are in a predetermined sport. But what it means is that whoever it is in charge believes in you.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody actually believes in you, and that feels great, especially like for a guy like myself, who I feel like along the way not a lot of people believe. You know, I don't think a lot of the people who I trained with or trained me believed I would do as much as I have, and just mainly because, like I said, if I go back and look at these old matches, and looking at how I look and my gear and all that, like, yeah, like I don't blame them one bit. But I've worked so hard to get everything, to get every little bit, and so somebody, you know, ECWA believed in me. Primal Conflict Wrestling believes in me. Yeah, so it's a very good feeling like that. There is meaning to these belts.
Well, now that you have been wrestling for a while, you are a ring veteran. What do you feel your role is in the locker room compared to when you started out? I mean, Bobby? Do you think that some of the young guys look to you to help, put their matches together? You're kind of you're more of a role model now. You've been around, you've had success. They look towards you, don't they?
You know, that now that you mention it, a little bit, for sure. I would say in ECWA, it happens more than other places. There are definitely a few people who will send me links to matches, and I, even if it's a 7-minute match, it'll probably take me 30 or 40 minutes to watch because I get passionate when I start writing, and maybe what I'm saying is completely wrong, but, you know, it's what I believe and what I feel, and so I'll end up writing them a novel worth of critiques and stuff like that, and it's not because I dislike them or what they're doing, it's just because, you know, they asked. If they wanted to hear that they were so great, I don't think, they quickly learned that I'm not the best person to come to, just to hear that.
Well, they want some honesty, though, right? That's good.
Yeah, some of the guys in ECWA will definitely ask me, or I'll show up early and work out in the ring with them, things like that. So, yeah, some people do ask me for advice and to watch their matches or to give them some ideas here and there. I guess, yeah, I never even really thought about it just because there are people in that locker room that I'm going to, the Mike Keeners, the John Finnegans, these guys who have been around way longer. They're the ones who I'm going to. So I guess it's weird for me to when I think about that people are coming to me for advice and what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, after all this time, and it is a tough business, it takes a lot of dedication. We talked about, you know, you having to get into the gym and you're out on the weekends. Do you still love it?
Man, there are some days when I want to say no, but I definitely do. It's not worth it if I didn't love it. I'm not making a living wrestling. I make a okay amount here and there. If I didn't love it, it's not worth it. There are times when I don't love it, maybe, and it doesn't love me. But I would say, you know, the good majority of the time, I definitely do. I had Monday Night Raw on earlier. You know, this week I went to a friend's house to watch the TLC pay-per-view event, whatever special event, whatever they're calling it now. We watched the Ring of Honor pay-per-view a week ago. You know, we're psyched up to see the New Japan Pro Wrestling pay-per-view. It's a great time to be a wrestling fan. There's so many things to watch and different products. You know, Chikara's fun to watch. And going back to Chikara, you know, when I was there talking to Mike Quackenbush 12 years ago, it was they were in front of probably 15 people in the back of garage of a store, and here they are selling out the ECW arena with like 2,000 people. You know, they have grown so much, and I love seeing that. That's a fantastic product. Love it, hate it. You know, people want to criticize it for being too campy, but they've created their own thing, and they haven't steered away from that. You have your Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. You have all these different opportunities and these things to watch, and it's exciting. You know, the rise of Daniel Bryan the last few years. When he was on when he turned on Bray Wyatt and took like that the jumpsuit off, like I got goosebumps watching that. That hasn't happened since since like Austin type stuff. Like
yeah.
To answer your question in this long answer, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's the greatest form of entertainment there is. You have comedy, action, drama, everything in right there in front of you at once sometimes.
I think that's good to hear because I think when we watch the performers in the ring, we want to feel like you still love this and you still enjoy it. And, you know, the last question, Bobby, before I let you go tonight, the business, as you mentioned earlier, it certainly has changed. And a big part of that is you have to kind of deal with the social media aspect of it now. There can be some great parts of that. There can be some real challenges to that. People reaching out to you on Twitter with a lot of positive and negative comments. Are you able to just kind of let them roll off your back a little bit and take it kind of for the spirit of what it is?
Definitely. And I mean, I'm sure I don't get it to the extent of some people, but I love seeing people. I love seeing people send me Twitter messages of hate or whatever, because, you know, they are taking some time out of their day to tell me how much they dislike me or something. So that's awesome. Good for them.
Hey, you're doing your job in a way, I guess, right?
Yeah. Hopefully, if I'm a heel that day, then
right,
they're
right
there. But yeah, it's an interesting thing because 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, who you would never have a clue probably what Tommy Dreamer's real name is. You know, to me, to everybody, he oh, what, his name isn't Tommy Dreamer? You know, and now, you know, you have people and you have your Facebook, and I'm just as guilty, and it's under your real name. And you know, these people, these fans friend you, and now they're seeing the real you in a sense, not just the character you portray. And maybe that hurts the business a little bit at times, because once again, like, you know, maybe they go to a show and you are that bad guy, but they don't know, you know, they see that you're a cool dude or whatever.
Yeah, I think it is different. But where can your fans find you on social media? Twitter, Facebook? Where can they find you?
All right, so we got the Twitter machine, we got the Instagram, and we got a website, an old-fashioned website that I really need to redo. But you can reach me at www.bobbyshield.com. If I got more visitors on it, maybe I'd actually update it more regularly. I have a Twitter, @RealBobShields, and then I have an Instagram, which is @_FlexAppeal, because somebody already was Flex Appeal.
Well, I want to thank you, Bobby, for joining me here on OWW Radio. Really enjoyed the conversation. Wish you a great holiday season, and I look forward to doing this again soon.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing all your listeners at ECWA in the new year, or Primal Conflict Wrestling, or wherever I am, and all that's available on my website, so check it out.
You got it. Thanks again to Bobby the Body Shields for today's interview. We'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
And don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter @OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thank you again to Bobby the Body Shields for today's interview. We hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well that's okay.